Welcome to Season 2 of The Wayfarer's Guide to World Building, a podcast for writers by Mythos & Inc. Publishing. I'm Kyle.
I'm Emma.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Christiana.
Special thanks to our patron Zach Schuster for making this episode possible. If you are a patron, send us your writing, world building, or publishing questions for us to answer in our bonus Q&A episodes, which we record as a thank you to our Patreon supporters. Our theme for Season 2 of the podcast is sci-fi and fantasy tropes. Writers often think of tropes negatively, but they're just commonly used themes or plot elements, symbols of the genre that keep readers coming back for more. Understanding tropes and using them effectively can deepen your world building. Fantasy fiction tends to make recurring use of specific races, species, or peoples and their societies. Elves live in forests and practice nature magic. Dwarves live underground and are miners, and humans populate large cities and are concerned with technological advancement. Oh, and the above races are usually good, while orcs, goblins, and dark elves are evil. Today's trope, as you might have guessed, is elves live in forests, aka standard fantasy races and societies. As usual, three of us are on the episode today. I'll go first and introduce myself. I'm Emma, she, her, editorial assistant at Mythos & Inc.
I'm Kyle, he, him, business and marketing director of Mythos & Inc.
I'm Christiana, they, them, public relations director of Mythos & Inc.
Okay. 10 years ago now, there was a single season show on MTV, classic, that I wish it would have got like picked up for another season. And I'm not talking about Firefly or anything like that. This is like something that I don't know if anybody who else has heard of this. And I loved it. Granted, I'm going to put an asterisk behind my love for it because I haven't watched it in a little while and it may not have aged well. So I just want to make sure I lay that groundwork because maybe it's terrible. I have no idea. But I loved it at the time. It's a horror comedy show in the style of a mockumentary called Death Valley. The series follows something called the Undead Task Force, the UTF. It's a division of the Los Angeles Police Department. And they're followed by a film crew that kind of films them in a cops documentary style. So basically, a whole bunch of monsters have come to the San Fernando Valley in California. And these are the people that are on the front lines dealing with this threat. It's been around for about a year, but we'll get to that in a second. The show deals with a lot of different types of monsters, from werewolves to vampires. But the most prevalent problem they have to deal with are zombies. And it's kind of like, you kind of think of them as like the rats in the city. Like they're just everywhere. It's just, they're the nuisance. And of course, zombies have lots of different tropes and myths and lore attached to them, right? Everything from one of the audio dramas that I loved called We're Alive, so good, check it out, to Walking Dead, to even Zombieland. But all of them have like a few things that are similar when it comes to this idea of zombies, right? They eat brains, they are undead, they rise from the grave. Are they fast? Are they slow? Are they organized, chaotic? Are they smart, mindlessly dumb? With zombies, it's almost like all of these things are true in some wave, shape, or form. In various shows, it often serves as a way to up the threat and the stakes of a scene. You know, you have zombies, and yes, they're overwhelming numbers, but suddenly, once you kind of get used to that, and they kind of like, they've built up enough of society that they can fend it off, there's a new zombie threat. They're smarter, or faster, or harder to kill in some way. So it's kind of the way zombies work, generally, as tropes. What is unique about this show's take on everything is that the show is set about a year later. So it's after the appearance of all of these monsters in the area, and life has, for the most part, settled down a bit. Shows like this can focus on the discovery of new monsters. But in this setting, it is the same old for the characters. It's good world building because most zombie tropes take this ever-increasing threat, keep us on the edge of our seat. In Death Valley, however, the newness or the scariness of the zombies has already been experienced by the characters. It's old hat for them now, and life for the most part is returning to some weird sense of normal. And as a result, they're able to use the same zombie trope, but instead of it being a horror, it's a slice of life comedy in so many ways. And I really enjoyed the show. So yeah, I think Death Valley has some really good world building as a result of that.
I like the slice of life horror. That's great. I was just going to ask, in Death Valley, what is the origin of the zombies? Is it still like a virus like in lots of them, or what? I know that you said the monster kind of arrived, but zombies specifically, where do they come from?
Okay. So this is a comedy. So they just showed up. Like there is no origin story for the zombies. They're just suddenly there? And that's not really an important question. The only thing that matters is life returning back to normal. And now we've kind of dealt with the threat. We can live with this now. And they move on. So the origin is never an important question to any of the characters at that point.
Interesting. So it's not like people that you know being turned into zombies. They're like a whole other species.
Well,
or it never gets into it.
So they don't really explain it, but they do give the impression that, yes, this is kind of like that. You get bitten or, you know, you become a zombie. So don't get bitten by zombies. But the way that they kind of work, and they do this in a almost scientific sense, is that when somebody first becomes a zombie, they're violent and they're hungry and they're fast, but their bodies are decaying. And eventually there's just these zombies that are just super slow. And they can't really move that well. And so they're just kind of standing at the side of the road and moving incredibly slowly. It's like, oh, if it's a problem, okay, the UTF will deal with it. And they just dispose of this really slow zombie and sort of thing. So it's kind of come to this point of normalcy and old hatness. And I think, too, part of it is the undead task force. They don't care about the origin. That's not their problem. Their problem is just dealing with the threat as it is. And that's all we talk about.
Nice.
What this reminds me a lot about is, first of all, to some degree, our current situation with the pandemic, like where it is this really genuinely tragic thing that's happening, but it's like it happens every single day and you become a tiny bit numb to it. So like that's an interesting and an emotional comparison. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But another media comparison is this reminds me of What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes, I also thought that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, no, it's vampires. And when you think of it, being undead and becoming a vampire and all these things are kind of scary. But it's also a little bit funny when you think of the tropes and you're like, you make it that way. I think that's like a really, I want to watch this. I haven't seen the show, but I'm thinking of What We Do in the Shadows and how much I adore that film and the series, and now I want to like watch this zombie version of it.
There's one scene that really that I for some reason has stuck with me. There's one character in particular. He's all about using a bat, not a gun, because a bat doesn't need bullets, etc. Another trope. But they get a call. There is a zombie that is at an old folks' home that needs to be disposed of. And so they go and they hear this screaming in the common room, and these two cops, they come running in, and this woman is screaming, and you can see this like being in front of her kind of walking towards her with her arms towards her, and he freaks out and he hits the guy with the bat, and then she keeps screaming. It was her husband coming to visit her. The zombie was actually in the corner. And it plays off of this like slow
that makes me
trope.
Sad.
Oh, it is terrible. Like, just it has all of these things that kind of mix in, but it is very macabre. And I can understand why other people don't like it. And maybe it didn't age well, but I could see where they play with some of these ideas.
I am a big fan of you can use tropes in comedy a lot because it sets that expectation where it's like people know the rules, they know the ground rules. So then you can start tweaking with them and playing them and making fun of them without having to explain them. And with comedy, it's like, you never want to have to explain your joke. So by using tropes like zombies and stuff like that, you don't ever have to explain it because everyone knows how zombies work. Everyone knows they want brains and often they're slow moving and they go back to where they know and all this kind of stuff. So I think that's like a really kind of clever way to write a comedy is to use those fantasy tropes because you can kind of poke fun at it without ever having to explain your joke.
Totally. That's a great point. Christiana, what's your example?
So I want to preface this by saying my example is not necessarily a great movie. But I think it's a great example of world building.
It can be both. That is true.
Exactly. So my example is Bright, which is a Netflix movie, and it's an urban fantasy action film. And it also stars the LAPD as like mythical creature enforcers. But what it is it's an LAPD officer and his orc partner confronting racism and police corruption while like addressing this magical world that exists in an urban setting. And like I said, I don't think it's a great movie, to be very honest with you. But I think the world that it created is super interesting because there are these fantasy tropes, like orcs are always bad, goblins are always bad, all these things. And I think that honestly, a lot of these tropes play into like racist stereotypes. My first introduction to this was like a Jewish friend shortly after high school. I would have been like early university. And they said, oh, I'm not a big fan of goblins because, you know, stereotypes. And I was like, I don't know. What do you mean? And they're like, goblins encapsulate all of these anti-Semitic stereotypes that like when you compare it to anti-Semitic propaganda, it's like a big nose obsessed with like money and beady eyes and all these terrible things. And they had a lot of really negative feelings towards goblins as a whole, because they often encapsulated these stereotypes that were used against them. And I felt kind of dumb for never realizing that before. And as soon as they pointed it out, I was like, oh my God, you're so right. Like, this is definitely a thing that happens. And I think that this movie was really interesting because it calls it out directly and challenges it while still incorporating it into the story. So like, the story could be improved, but the world it created was really, really compelling because it said, okay, so orcs exist in the real world. Everyone assumes that they're bad. That's prejudice. That's bad. That is a bad thing to assume. And why do you assume those things kind of deal? And so I found it really interesting as a viewer to watch it because I was like, you're right. I would make that assumption thanks to things like Lord of the Rings and like all of these big fantasy stories that are like orcs equal bad without really delving into it too much. And I thought it was super interesting because they took a trope where you go like, oh yeah, orcs equal bad. And they're like, okay, why? Why do you think that? This is how maybe it would play out in real life. And it's put it side by side with like racism, which is a huge issue in society. And was like, this is how we kind of view our fantasy tropes. Like, why are we comfortable and accustomed to these prejudices in our fantasy stories when this is such an issue in real life? And I thought that was really interesting. And I think that they could have done it a lot better. It was like a 10 out of 10 concept. I thought it was fantastic. The story could have been a lot better. But I thought it was a really, really good example of storytelling, or at least world building, in the sense that it took a trope and challenged the viewer on their kind of presumed understanding of the world, or at least of that trope.
I felt the same thing with Bright, where I saw the commercials and I was like, oh, this looks super cool. It's the world building is awesome. It looks like it's going to be a super neat concept. And then the story itself was not great. No. So yeah, totally there with you. But it just goes to show that you can have great world building even in a mediocre story. So
yeah, I think it is a good example of like world building can be so intriguing and it could draw people in. It is a very important aspect of a story, but you still have to have a story. I can't just be a cool world. It is a very important part and it will draw people in. But, you know, you could build the most fantastic world and have a very bland story that happens within it.
Totally.
You know, there's a part of me that, because this came out at the end of 2017, and I'm wondering also if timing was off. So this is like, I know this story because I loved it. I feel the same as the both of you with it. But the idea of racism and police corruption and those two things, it's like a year before its time, right? Like that's only when Colin Kaepernick is starting to really make bigger news in terms of kneeling at the anthem and police brutality. And then, you know, the George Floyd stuff and all of that. And now it is on the forefront of something. And I wonder if they could tell a better story, same world, same idea now, because there's a lot more that society kind of understands and is interested in more so.
I think maybe it would have been a little bit of exploitation to do it after the fact. I wonder if it would be perceived as taking like a really, really serious and severe situation and turning it into a fantasy story. I don't think I'd be comfortable with that. And I'm not even a member of that community. And I couldn't even begin to understand how they would feel about the situation. But I could see someone viewing that and saying, you know, they're capitalizing off of a really important and really vital social movement and turning it into this weird fantasy story. There's also like a tendency in storytelling in general, but especially in fantasy, to instead of including diverse characters, you make them a race, like a different race. You know what I mean? Like instead of talking about, like this movie could have been a movie without works. It could have been a movie about a black LAPD officer.
Yeah.
And it would have been just as important and just as vital. And like, I know Will Smith is a black LAPD officer in the film, but like, you know what I mean? Like it could have been, you don't need to turn like marginalized communities into creatures to get white people to care about them. Like that is a serious problem. That's a serious trope that exists as well. So I could see that being an issue. And that's why I say like this movie, I really love the concept of like taking something that people just assume and challenging them on that, because it encourages them to take that into real life and say, even in fantasy, I make these decisions about fantasy races. I say like the drow, all drow are bad. You know what I mean? And then thinking about how do I apply this in real life? So like it had a really good potential. I don't think the story was great. And I think if it had come out more recently, I think it would be even more. I think it would be worse, to be honest with you. It's such a salient issue that's been persistent for such a long time. And then to turn it into a fantasy scenario is like, I think a little distasteful. But I don't know. I don't write movies for Netflix, unfortunately. So
not yet. That's episode 4.
There you go. Podcast.
In Bright, are there other fantasy races in the world other than orcs? And are they also all thought to be bad? Is it kind of a magic bad, normal humans good? Or is there a distinction between different races, fantasy races in the film as well?
There are elves and there are orcs, but I think like the elves are still bad. They're still magic. Like I know for sure the general feeling was like magic, not human, bad. There are definitely elves. Now that you meant, yeah, there are definitely elves. But they kind of like work with the humans to oppress the orcs, I think, to some degree. Now I'm thinking of there's like a federal agent that's an elf, and it works with like the U.S. Department of like the Magic Task Force or something like that, which also plays into the other stereotypes and tropes where it's like elves are good, orcs are bad kind of thing. So... yeah, I think it was just such a good idea, and there's just a lot of room for improvement, but I do think about it a lot.
So for my example, I'm going to talk about the Shadowhunter franchise, which is originally a multiple book series written by Cassandra Clare. There are multiple series set in the same world. Two of the most popular are The Mortal Instruments, which had a terrible movie, and from what I hear, a better TV series based on it. I haven't seen the TV series, but it's apparently better than the movie, so which really it would have to be, because that movie was very bad. But anyway, yes, apologies if that's your favorite movie of all time.
When the bar is low.
Enjoy it. But then another series that's popular from her franchise as well is The Infernal Devices. In this world, demons are interdimensional monsters which break into our world to cause death and destruction. Opposing them are the Shadowhunters, a race of supernatural beings, humans with the blood of angels, so part human, part angel. Many other classical fantasy races, such as vampire, fae, warlocks, werewolves, etc., also exist in the shadow world. These all originated as either a mixing of human and demon blood, such as in the case of fae and warlocks, or they were infected with a demonic disease, like vampires and werewolves. These non-Shadowhunter supernatural races are known as Downworlders, and though they are still generally distrusted and looked down upon by their angelic counterparts, they are still believed to have human souls and thus are not hunted and killed, for the most part, the way that demons are. I think that this is good world building because it puts a twist on classic fantasy races. So demons as interdimensional beings is pretty cool. And the angels that are depicted in the series are much closer to the horrifying, exceedingly powerful depictions of biblical angels than the fluffy white winged ones that we generally see. And the explanation of various races being a blend of either human and angel or human and demon is also sort of a unique flavor to the story. I think small twists like these are the best way to have classical races in your story, because you don't want to change them too much. Otherwise, they stop being the original thing. So if you call a character a werewolf, but they transform into a tree in the middle of the day, that's not actually a new take on a werewolf. That's just a completely different creature. And you can't just call it a werewolf and it still be a werewolf, right? Like, you have to have some of those hallmarks. But you also want to have something unique so that they are interesting and also fit your unique story better. And I think that this world does a really great job of kind of just giving a little bit of a twist to make it unique, but still having all of those things that we can recognize these creatures as being those races.
So where is the line for werewolves? Like, what, like, is it just what they turn into, or where do they stop becoming a werewolf?
It says wolf. Right in the name, Kyle.
Yeah, but
this is true. I mean, it's kind of like that old, what is it, the Ship of Theseus question, where it's like, if you replace the boards in the ship one by one, at what point does it stop being the same ship?
This is true. And I think like the wear is the important part. You know, like, you could be like a wear couch.
A wear cat or a wear. Yeah, if you were a wear tree, a then wear. Sure, you can turn into a tree.
No. So Christiana needs to write a story about a wear couch now, please.
Honestly, if every once in a while I could just turn into a couch and just hang out in my living room all day, I'd be very open to that.
I mean, I think that's a good question, Kyle, of where do we draw the line with when is it still that creature and when is it not? Like, you know, in Twilight, Stephanie Meyer gets a lot of flack because her vampires can walk in the day, but they still do have a bunch of other vampiric traits like drinking human blood, being immortal, etc. So it's kind of like, what can you change before it goes too far and it's not that original thing anymore? And I don't know if there is a hard and fast line that you can draw, but it's kind of like, just keep tweaking it until you've gone too far and then pull back.
Yeah. That might be what beta readers are for.
I think that's what beta groups readers are for.
Our Discord channel, selfish plug, etc.
I do have to quickly share a little anecdote about the Shadowhunters trilogy. I read it as a teenager and my friend and I were absolutely obsessed. And when the movie came out, we like showed up on the first day dressed up in like cosplay for Shadowhunters. And it was like us and a bunch of people who were like probably 4 years younger than us, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're like 21, that's like a significant age gap. And the movie was so bad, and we're just sitting there in like leather corsets and a bunch of fake tattoos drawn on us. It was one of the most awkward experiences of my life.
Oh no.
But I do really adore that series, and I adore it because of their portrayal of like demons and monsters, and I thought it was a really interesting twist on the trope. And I'm also absolutely obsessed with Magnus Bane, who's also I think in the Mortal Engine. I'm obsessed with Magnus Bane. But I like such a cool depiction of each of the tropes. I think especially Magnus Bane. I love them so much. Like, they're just they're so cool, and it's like such an interesting take on like a warlock, and like, I just really loved it. And I think that's one of the things that like really solidified my love for fantasy and like urban fantasy and modern fantasy and that kind of thing. I think it did a really good job of taking these creatures that we know and understand, and like the weird little vampire cult club thing that happens in the books and everything like that. It's like such an interesting take on these tropes. I really appreciate that series for that.
Totally. Clearly, I agree, because I picked it as my example. So, Kyle, you're going to have to also read it now so that you can get on board with our discussion.
Yeah, it's good.
I'll just watch the movie.
No. Please don't. It's.
I'll watch that one and the Avatar The Last Airbender movie, and I should be good to go.
Perfect.
And Golden. The Aragorn movie, and then you're set.
Yeah. The Holy Trinity, if you will.
Or the Infernal Trinity, is that the opposite of holy? Is
maybe more accurate. Yeah.
The cursed trilogy.
Yeah.
Just before we get into the questions that you should ask yourself if you decide to play with this trope in your novel, I'd like to pose it to you that if you think this podcast is at least $1 worth of education and entertainment, consider supporting the show through Patreon at patreon.com/mythosandink. You too could become a beloved human in our hearts, and you can get a shout out on this very podcast.
Ooh.
You using the magic of technology to pause time for just a moment here to ask a really important favor. If you're enjoying this podcast and want to hear more of it, the most helpful thing you can do is to write us a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to our podcast. Positive reviews are the number one way for a new podcast to get more listeners, which in turn will let us do all sorts of cool things like transcribe all our episodes and from recording bi-weekly to maybe even weekly. You can go leave us one right now. I promise I'll keep time paused until you get back.
And with that, we are going to dive into what should you ask yourself if you have a traditional fantasy race in your novel, game, etc. world.
Well, I'm going to steal exactly what Christiana said at the end of mine. So I hope that's okay. Instead of retelling all the information about traditional fantasy races that we already know from countless other franchises, how do you build off of those assumptions and build that into a new story that hasn't been told? And can you use that to subvert our expectations of what kind of story? So going from like tension of zombies to slice of life comedy that you're trying to tell.
My question would be, ask yourself why you're using that trope. If you're using that trope to fill in a stereotype, challenge yourself. Mm. Why are you falling back on that stereotype? Why are you using orcs as bad guys? Why are you using goblins as bad guys? Are there maybe certain characteristics that are feeding into an unconscious bias? Challenge yourself a little and think about why you like those certain tropes as the bad guys and why you like the other tropes as the good guys.
And with my question, I'm going to get you to ask yourself, are you sort of twisting Christiana's question a little bit, or I guess maybe the flip side, and it's, are you close enough to the classic fantasy races to actually be using that? Would you be better off if this character was called something else rather than an elf? Are they really an elf, or are you just using that because it's an easy, convenient thing for you to do? Make sure that the races that you're including are recognizable, or, you know, make up your own race. It's fantasy. You can totally do that. You don't have to use these races, but make sure if you do that they're at least recognizable. The hosts of Wayfarer's Guide to Worldbuilding are also staff at Mythos & Ink Publishing, where we publish books for geeks by geeks. At the end of each podcast episode, we give you a little insight into the world of book publishing by sharing what we've been up to. So, Kyle, what have you been up to?
Ah, man, everybody else always has the more interesting answers, and then I gotta come in. So at least I get
start
to go
doing interesting things, Kyle. Yes.
Allison and I have been working pretty hard at the Mythos Academy and getting that website all up and ready to go. So our next steps for that is we're getting a group of select folk to trial run it. So we're going to give away a couple of courses, and so that way they can kind of go through it and get all the bugs out so we don't start selling something and then have people kind of stumble in. So we're really excited to get that process started. And once we get our beta folk to go through it and test it all for us, then we'll be good to go to open it for everybody else. So that's kind of what I've been up to, is fixing errors in code is pretty much what I've been doing.
Nice. Christiana, what about you? More interesting than errors in code?
Maybe. Depends on your interests. I've been working on some marketing stuff, including like Facebook ads, which for data geeks like me, I'm obsessed with figuring out demographics and fiddling with it until we find the right target audience, because I'm a big old nerd for that kind of stuff. And also, if you are not subscribed to the newsletter already, subscribe to the newsletter, because then you get to listen to me ramble on and suggest some interesting blogs and do all of these fun and interesting things that you should care about, because I have important things to say.
Mm-hmm. There's pictures too, so even if you don't like words, pictures, you can look at the pictures. There you go.
You don't even have to read, you just have to look and click the links.
And I have been working on editing Making Myths and Magic. So that is the upcoming how-to guide written by our very own Allison Alexander and Shelley Campbell. You've heard Allison talk about it on previous podcasts, and it is now in my hands, where I am diligently editing it to try and make it sound pretty. Although Allison and Shelley have done a great job already, so my work, very easy. You should definitely edit stuff written by editors. It's great. If you are a person looking for a sci-fi and fantasy writing community, you should join ours on Discord. If you want to talk to other writers, ask editors questions, or anything like that, head to mythosinc.com and join our Discord. If you have any questions, suggestions, or comments about editing, writing, the podcast, or anything else in the world, you can email us at podcast@mythosinc.com or tweet us at @mythosandinc. There we go. All right. So until next time, fellow wayfarers, go build worlds. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.